If you don't have one of the copies in the back of the One True Church, that's what we're using kind of to help us in our study. So there's plenty of copies back there if anybody needs one. We are on the, if you'll open it up, last week we kind of did our introduction and we looked at the first page. And today we're going to move to the inside as you unfold it, the voice of God and the voice of history. And what we're going to look at is some of the religious groups and churches that have been established since the writing of the Bible, which was over 2,000 years ago, or at least the beginning of the church as we read about in the book of Acts. If you look over the list of the different churches, the time that they were started, the place they were started, the founder of the churches, we'll go into some of this. Some of these are familiar to you. You may know some members of some of these churches that you could find out firsthand from them what they practice, what they teach, how they organized, how they worship. You can look on the internet today. Those of you that have the internet, there's all the information on just about any subject that you want to find, and you can read about any particular religious group that is in the world today. You can read some of the church histories that are very detailed about events that have taken place since the recording of the New Testament that we have. There are handbooks written by some of the churches that kind of go into some detail about what they teach, what they practice. So we need to be careful when we make our judgments. And we would ask that we make honest judgments, righteous judgments, that the Word of God be our standard that we look at in the things that we practice, the things that we teach, the things that we believe. I looked over this list, and there was one church there that I was not familiar with. Can anybody guess which one that might be? And then I'll kind of elaborate a little bit. But look over the list there of the churches on the right-hand column. There's one that I just was not familiar with. Congregational? That was the one I was not at all familiar with. So I said, oh, I'm going to do a little research. In fact, if this was a class and we were teaching, and you were a student, everybody would be assigned one of these churches to research. So you would have your information, not just taking what is set up here about it. But I did a little research on the Congregational Church. Founded in England by a man named Robert Brown, 1550, that would be a long time ago. And what I found was that the first thing that came up was that they were a Protestant church that practices congregational church government. Each congregation is independent and autonomously runs its own affairs. So I'm thinking, yeah, that sounds like the New Testament church, the teaching of the New Testament, where every church was independent and they were autonomous and they had their own structure according to what the Bible said. So I said, okay, that's good. I'm all right with that. Continue to read on. They were also called the Separatists. They were somewhat familiar or similar to the Presbyterians. At that time, they were concerned about social issues, abolition, temperance, woman's suffrage. Today, if we came, well, many of them came over on the Mayflower. They came to Plymouth. And if you were to name three of the most prestigious colleges in the United States, they founded them. They founded Harvard. A member of this particular group founded Harvard, Yale, and Dartmouth. So they have a connection there with those prestigious colleges. Today, they also teach universalism or Unitarianism, which is the possibility of universal salvation. So that's one of their doctrines, that everyone will be saved, or there is the possibility of everyone being saved. Of course, the Bible says it's possible that all people be saved, but they would take that in a different direction than the New Testament takes it. They have divided, in modern day America, they have divided into three groups. The most conservative of those groups is called the Congregational Christian Conference. The most, and I don't really know the right word for this, but the most progressive of those would be the United Church of Christ. So they use the term Church of Christ, which we do too. We use that. They say they are United Church of Christ. I looked up on one of their websites of the Parkview Congregationalist Church, United Church of Christ. They have in their bulletin, and they have a bulletin just like many churches do, and that some of their activities that they engage in, they have end-of-life discussion. They'll have a particular class on that. They'll have a chair yoga hour. If you're interested in yoga, you can take that. They have other activities they are concerned about. They reminded me of a Doonesbury cartoon that I cut out 21 years ago when I was preaching over in Bath County. And I'm just going to read it real quick to you, and I'll put it on the wall if you want to see it. But Doonesbury is here, and he's the rector or the pastor or the leader of this particular group. And he says, so little time, so many scheduled events. And then he gets the group together. Okay, flock, I thought I'd run through this week's activities. This Monday, of course, we have a lecture on nutrition from Kate Moss, personal chef. Tuesday and Thursday, we will have our regular 12-step nights. Scott, would that be drugs or sex addiction? Drugs. Sex addiction, we've cut down to 9 steps. That's on Friday at 6:30, right after organic gardening. Also a special treat, Saturday night will be aerobic male bonding night. You might bring your sneakers. Any questions? Now, this is the key. Yes. Will there be a church service? Canceled. There was a conflict with the self-esteem workshop. Now, that's extreme. But if you look around our country, and even in Mount Sterling, you will find that there are many activities that churches engage in that would kind of be similar to this. Okay? And not that they've cut out worship services that I'm aware of here, but, and he's a satirist, obviously, kind of making fun of this, but he has a legitimate point that many people seek church membership or to worship certain places simply because they are activities that they sponsor or encourage that you're interested in. And it's kind of a convenience for you if you're interested in any of those things or other subjects. So that was my take on just reading about a congregation and I didn't know too much about. Now, some of these are more familiar. Some of these you may either have been a member at one time or know members. Does anybody know members of the Roman Catholic Church? All right, I think all of us will raise our hand. Okay, does anybody want to speak to that before we move on? You notice, excuse me, go ahead.
Basically, their priests they consider them to be the mediator between God and the parishioners, and then they look to the Pope as being basically the authority for the church on earth.
Okay. I think that's a fair assessment. I think most Catholics would agree with those statements been made. The starting point, I think most of them would agree with that this particular Boniface III became the universal bishop, because at that time the idea of bishops were men over several different congregations, and there was the Greek Orthodox Church, and they kind of split from the Roman Catholic because over certain subjects, and they are still in existence today, the Greek Orthodox Church. Now, what about the Pope that is probably the most known fact about the Pope, no matter who he is, what is said about him? Is he infallible or not? Have they thought that at times past, that his word is law, or he receives revelation from heaven and we go by what the Pope said? If the Pope makes a decree, and obviously there is dissension from that in the Catholic Church today, there are those who don't agree with the Pope, but it is probably the largest religious group that believes in Jesus Christ in the world. And they are tremendously influential throughout the world. In particular parts of the world, they are by far the most dominating force in people's lives and in religion. So you can study their doctrines. And every church that you read listed down here, at least most of them, came about as a result of opposition to the Catholic Church and their teachings and their practices. So that's kind of the starting point, because you'll see there's a big gap from 606 A.D. to the next 520 A.D. and a man named Martin Luther. Now, who do we know about Martin Luther? Anything?
He wrote a thesis, or several theses, that disputed some of the Catholic teaching. Catholic
means
universal.
It does, universal.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote 95 theses, and you're right. And he, these were all of these men, from you read about Martin Luther, Henry VIII, John Calvin, almost all of these men, at least the first three or four, they were members of the Catholic Church. They were just dissidents. They did not believe some of the practices that. They thought it was corrupt. They thought the church had been corrupted. And so their determination was to reform the church, to make it better, to make it more in line with what they believed it should be. And Martin Luther did not want a church named after him. He would say that, I want men to be Christians. But because of followers of his teachings, we have the Lutheran Church. Now, I don't think we have one in Mount Sterling. And I can't remember, there may be one in Lexington, probably is. But it's not well known around this area. It's usually up north, more northern. I've talked to people who have moved down here from Wisconsin or Minnesota, and they were familiar with the Lutheran Church and may have even been members of a Lutheran church at one time. So you can read, all of this is on the internet. This is not anything that's hidden, and you can research it. Henry VIII, Episcopal. Anybody know about the Episcopal Church? What do you know about the Episcopal Church? We got one in Mount Sterling. Beautiful building. If you've ever been in it, it's a gorgeous building. But what about anything? Anybody know anything about the Episcopal Church? How did it get started?
When I was born, my parents had me baptized in the Episcopal Church.
Right. Right.
They point to a lot of women in their structure, what you might call clergy.
They had a woman down here until just a year or two ago who was the, and they've had several that were over the church, that were leaders of the worship services. Henry VIII, isn't he the one who the church wouldn't grant him the annulment or the divorce, and he decided he'd start his own church? Basically, that's what he did. So that's how they got their start. So that's a fact. And I don't think anybody who is an Episcopalian would dispute that. That's how the church got started. So, influential, yes, but they have lost significant numbers of people in the recent years because they have accepted gay marriage, and even among their supposed clergy. In fact, I think there was a man from Kentucky who was the first gay priests that came out, and they've accepted, and they've lost membership here as well in Mount Sterling over that fact. People just, it just goes against what the New Testament teaches, and those are just what we read about, and we're trying to make righteous judgments or fair judgments. Congregationalists talked about, who's the most famous member of the United Church of Christ? Anybody know? He's a very famous man. President Obama. His teachings and his policies reflect the views of this particular church as far as their social reforms and programs and practices. Remember when he first was elected to head that Jeremiah, who was the preacher that was so influential over him, and he just blasted so many things that, you know, he saw were not right, and it was something. I don't think the president expresses that view that he is a member of that church very publicly or very frequently, but when he was elected, he was a member of the United Church of Christ. Baptists, some of you are familiar with the Baptist Church. Has anybody ever heard that the church was started by John the Baptist? Has anybody ever heard that teaching? All right, now, how would you prove that if you were in a conversation with somebody and they said, well, you know, the church was started by John the Baptist. That's why we're the Baptist Church. Right, right. Well, now, see, they have here that the Baptist Church was started by a man named John Smith in 1607. And, you know, I used to, and we may still have it at the church building, but I got a Baptist manual one time, and I've read it over and looked at it. And it's, again, all this information is available. If you find somebody who's a member of this particular religious groups and they want to study or are willing to study, You can read about what their church practices, and they may say, well, I didn't know we did that, because a lot of this is not, you know, there is in many churches there is a real distinction between the clergy and the laity, and the laity basically are the people who sit out there and they support the work with their money and they listen, but they don't really have a say so in what goes on. And that is why we have this great advantage of God's Word that we can look at and see if practices are correct or not and teachings are accurate or not.
Doesn't the Baptist Church, don't they have different, branches? Or, like, you have your Southern Baptist.
Right,
you have
your, many.
Then you have the First Baptist, the Second Baptist, and this and that. But some of them, I think, like, going back to what Donnie said, I know a lot of the Southern Baptist people, they do go back towards, you know, John the Baptist, which, I mean, you know, he didn't do anything but pave the way for Jesus, but that's where they get their name from, is from him. But even in their own, they couldn't agree, and they divisioned off.
Right.
One different.
Primitive Baptist, they're so... Old Regular Baptist, there are, you know, again, Hard Shell, there are so many different groups. Okay, we're going to evaluate. Yes, good point. Good point. Good point. And again, most of these people are trying to reform the existing church. They're not out to start a new church, but to make reforms in what was currently, at the time that they lived, the practices that they saw were not correct, the teaching that was not according to the Bible, and they got in trouble with those who were in authority in the particular church, the Roman Catholic Church, which viewed these people as heretics, as, and I'll read a little something in just a moment about how their view of certain of these reformers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brad's come out.
Mm-hmm.
Brad's come out of that background. Ernie Fletcher, preacher. In fact, he said Ernie Fletcher was his preacher at one time, Brad Smallwood's preacher. And so, and a lot of you know former Governor Fletcher. Some of you kin to former Governor Fletcher. So he's from, and you know, and we're not, these, some of these people we're talking about, they were, you know, outstanding people with many good qualities. Let's, they weren't evil in the sense that, you know, you'd want them as a neighbor because they'd be a good neighbor to you. They'd help you out. They'd take care of you. It's just that we've got to examine all this by what God's Word has said. And that's sometimes why we have to disagree or differ with people who we genuinely like personally and are friendly with. According to what? Yes, you're voted on. According to, yes, that's accurate. That's the way I remember it. And the distinction is that the baptism, that of course the Baptist term, you would think baptism is important, and it is to them. But as Dutch said, you are already saved, but you are added to the Baptist church by baptism. But you are saved before baptism, which is certainly a different teaching than I read in the New Testament. Well, that's what we, when we examine everything, and we're going to look at the Church of Christ probably next week. We probably won't get time to it this week, but we're going to say the same standard applies to what we do as anybody else out there. The Methodist, John Wesley, very, very well-known preacher. Methodist Church has been influential, but like so many others, when it comes to the social issues of the day, they have deviated from, I believe, what the New Testament teaches. Who's the most famous Methodist in America today? Who touts her faith? Hillary Clinton, her Methodist background, she brings it up when she talks about religious things. All right, let's look at some newer ones. These are all American. Now, this is the ones that probably affect us to a degree, maybe a little bit differently. Look at 1830. Joseph Smith founded what? Mormon Church. Is it influential? What are they known for? Well, just give me a few facts that you know about the Mormon Church. Whether polygamy, as they still practice it or not. Have the Book of Mormon. There's the Book of Mormon. Thank you, Melinda. Looking for. But any of these groups have manuals or creeds or doctrines or teachings, and it's just, they'll give you this, you know, if you want to study with them. And Tom, I think, studied with them. I've studied with a few of them in times past. Mormon Tabernacle Choir, you won't find too many better singers in the world. They have some beautiful singing. How'd they get out to Utah, though? Of all places, they didn't start in Utah. They started up in, I think, in New York or someplace. How'd they get to Utah? They were persecuted, weren't they? There were a lot of people who didn't like them. And so I think several of their leaders lost their lives. And they went out to a place where there was not going to bother them, because who lived in Utah? Nobody. So they own Utah, don't they? They pretty much own Utah. What I understand, their teachings are dramatically different than the New Testament teachings, if you've ever studied with one. But they are dedicated people, and they have the Watchtower publications that come out, and they'll leave you a track with that, and they'll. They did what, James? Oh. They were, I think a lot of people knew that they didn't deal with them maybe in the right manner, but they knew they were false teachers. And, you know, Joseph Smith's record of how he found the tablets and all of this stuff is very, but yet there's a pretty strong group over Meats at Owensville. And we've got some people I know that have become Mormons, and they came out of different religious backgrounds. And they have their hierarchy. I think if you were to study that, the higher you got in that church, there would be some things going on that you lay people might not know about. Yeah. Right. They're off the interstate down there at Owensville. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. They have a reputation for that. In fact, one of our former nominees for president was a Mormon, wasn't he? Romney? Governor Mitt Romney was a Mormon. What about the Adventist? What's an Adventist? Anybody know about the Adventist? Yeah, it doesn't say Seventh-day Adventist here, but I'm assuming that's who they are talking about. And I don't. Yeah, they the Sabbath, and I have talked to people, and I don't understand their reasoning particularly. And Sherry might be able to confirm this if she was in here right now, but where you take walnuts. Down there on the 213. They're closed on Saturday. And somebody just told me it's because they were Adventists. I don't know if that's a fact or not. I don't either, but it's an interesting possibility that they would recognize that day as a day that they would not do any what we would call commercial or secular work for profit. So, but you can read about them. Christian Scientist, Mary Baker Eddy. What about Christian Scientist? What do you know about them? He's in Scientology.
Is that the same?
I don't think so. I think, I don't know. See, there's so many here that are not listed.
Is this the one with the watchtower? Or is that
no, that's Jehovah's Witness with the watchtower. Christian Scientists, what's their view on medicine and doctors and healings and surgeries and teachings? A lot of it's up here. If you're sick, it's the mind. You may have some physical ailments, but they publicly, some of them used to profess, you know, it's all up here. It's mental. And they did not encourage a lot of interaction with physicians or teachers or healers or whatever. In fact, they thought they were healers in some sense. The only reason I know too much about this is I had a great uncle who was a member of this Christian Scientist, who was a Christian Scientist lecturer, who traveled over the country and gave lectures on what they believe. And I don't know exactly what it believes, but Chicago was a major influential place for them. And they've had a lot of influence. And I don't know too much. Mary Baker Eddy is, you can read about her. I mean, all of these, again, you can read about. Last one we'll look at there on this page is the Jehovah's Witnesses, Charles T. Russell. Now, how many of you have had contact with Jehovah's Witnesses? Let me ask you this. Did you initiate the contact or did they initiate the contact?
They did.
They are a zealous group that go out, much like the Mormons. Go out, they'll pile in a station wagon, two or three or four of them, and they'll drive up and they'll get out, and if you don't talk to them, they'll still want you to get their literature, and sometimes we study with them, and their teachings, some of these latter ones, they're great at making predictions about the end of the world. Yeah, now that's several groups. That's a good point. Some of these religious groups, they want to control your life to an extent maybe that you might not be too comfortable with. But we have... anybody, any other comments on this particular page? Like I said, we're just kind of scratching the surface of looking at particular groups. Okay. I did, didn't I? John Calvin... You're right. I'm glad you brought that up. John Calvin is well known for his writings, Calvin's Institutes or Institutions. He has he's very influential. These men got their teaching basically from some of the writers 200 or 300 years after the church. Augustine was a famous writer, and they believe in the predestination. They believe the fact that irresistible grace, if you're going to be saved, there's nothing you can do about it. If you're destined to be lost, there's nothing you can do about it. It's one or the other, and it was all chosen before you had a say in the matter. And that doesn't sound, you know, like what I read in the New Testament about God's irresistible grace in the sense that, you know, if you are destined to be saved, you'll be saved. Limited atonement is the idea that Jesus didn't die for everybody. He died for the select or the chosen or those who were going to be saved. All this known before the foundation of the world. Calvin is a great writer, and he makes some persuasive arguments, but you have to examine what he said, like James and so many of you said, Donnie, with what the New Testament teaches. And you can, and they'll say, well, you interpret it different than I do. Well, I don't know if that's exactly right or not. Some things just seem to be very plain that don't need to be interpreted. It's just a fact. You either believe it or you don't believe it. And this is kind of where we are in our study. We're just trying to see what the Bible teaches, and you know, when we get into this next week, we'll go into the open the page up there to the middle, and we'll just look at the marks of the church and try to determine